The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Delighted to have you here on Find Your Phone Friday, 770-563-3770-KMED. How are you holding up this morning? Everything okay? I know a lot of people looking at stock market stuff and 401k. I kept checking in with my little baby 401k. It's not very much. I don't have nearly as much put away as I would like because, I was doing a estimate the other day. I was trying to think about, okay, what did the divorces that I had with the mothers of my children cost? And I did the estimate one time that just in child support alone, it was about $250,000. $250,000. It's like you take, you have kids and you have bad marriages and, you just take the value of a house and set it on fire in the parking lot. And there you go. That's pretty much the way it goes. So the one thing I will say, don't marry crazy people. It's all, of course, my exes would probably say, you're crazy. But anyway, yeah, it was interesting looking in on the stock market yesterday, and that seems to be the big deal. Although the jobs report from March actually ended up being pretty good, but they're not even paying attention to that right now. Jobs report looking pretty good. Unemployment a little bit higher in some spots there, but the main thing had to do with major bloodletting, and it was kind of a pin meeting a bubble. I think we can be honest about things like this. And I had mentioned briefly yesterday that one of the biggest challenges I think we had is that people, oh, look at that roaring stock market. Look at that roaring stock market. Oddly enough, though, most of it was concentrated in a handful of stocks. Most of this huge, bubblicious wealth creation that people are complaining about this morning was from a few stocks. It's the Apples. It's the Amazons. Those sort of things. The Magnificent Seven, Google, various others. Just anything really connected with the globalist thing just got pounded yesterday. Especially if you were talking about any kind of business which requires a lot of foreign manufacturing in order to make it pencil. Now, I don't know if that TV show Shark Tank is still out there. I don't watch a whole lot of TV for the most part, but I remember how Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, would always go in there. They'd be talking to people about, oh, so you got this this new invention, right? This new invention. Oh, yeah, that's a great invention. You can't make it in the United States. There's no way you can afford to make it. And Mr. Wonderful and all these other people, all the other ones that were there, would always be, how many times did you watch that? And then they would talk about, what is your plan to get it manufactured overseas? And you would have occasionally a business person that would say, I'd really like to manufacture it here. You can't afford to do that. And so, we won't, we are not going to invest in your product unless you find a way to get it made overseas. Remember watching a Shark Tank when you would see that every now and then? And that would irritate me. It really would. But I understood the Shark Tank people, yes, even Mr. Wonderful, they were saying the right thing. At that time, that was the right thing because this had been the entire focus of Western civilization, meaning the United States of America, that you can't make it here. You got to make it somewhere else to be able to sell it into the international markets and all this kind of stuff. And they were right. And so they would always do this. And then as Ross Perot would say, and I voted for Ross Perot, by the way, that year that he was running. I thought he made a lot of sense. Hey, that giant sucking sound, Larry. Here's your sound bite, Larry. Giant sucking sound. All going down there, down to Mexico. Well, yeah, all happened. So now, though, we've been experiencing, 30, 40, 50 years of globalism. And really, the globalism era really started after Nixon ended up just going with the pure fiat currency back in the early 1970s. You disconnect gold from reality, that kind of thing. So that had been a long-term trend, really. And President Trump says, we're going to get this reversed. And so most of these stocks that really got pounded yesterday were the ones that were requiring foreign manufacturing, because now there's going to be a lot of tariff on a lot of these things. The company Wayfair, my wife has bought several things from Wayfair over the years, and it's a very nice home goods online website. The value of Wayfair alone went down 20% yesterday, just one day, 20%. And because most of this is their stuff is made mostly in Vietnam. Vietnam is almost the new China, really. Comes right down to it for a lot of lower value manufacturing. And so you buy a furniture piece from Wayfair or a stuffed pillow or, you know, whatever the case might be. Well, the value of the company dropped 20% because they realized that the tariffs are going to be that big of a deal on any kind of business in which you are importing, you know, something into the United States. Apple and NVIDIA alone, they lost, there's so much going on there, about $500 billion just yesterday alone. And there's now talk that the top iPhone in the United States will soon be $2,300. Woohoo! Yeah. I think I'm going to be hanging on to my old boat anchor Android Note 20 5G. I'm just going to hang on to that. You know, we may even get to 5 to 6 or 7G here pretty soon. 5G is plenty fast for me right now. I think I'm going to be hanging on to my phone for a little while. $2,300 for an iPhone? Wow. Yeah, needless to say, Tim Cook's not real happy about those things. But, you know, we kind of knew this was coming. We knew this was coming. There was a bit of this. We knew this was coming. And there are going to be some winners and some losers. And right now, the Magnificent Seven would appear to be kind of the big losers of the moment. The big Magnificent Seven, so-called Magnificent Seven stocks. All right, so that's what we're looking at. Futures this morning down another 1,000, 1,100 or so. So we're probably going to see a little more bloodletting. And at some point, there will be a bounce, and some people will see some of this stuff was oversold. And then, hey, you know, there's also money to be made during bloodletting times like this, too. And the smart traders, I'll bet have their checkbooks out. I don't know which ones you should buy, nor would I advise you on things like that, but I was kind of happy to have gold. I have a lot of gold stocks in my particular baby 401k, and also minerals and supplies, because I was thinking, you know, at some point there was going to be this, you know, this need to start reinvigorating manufacturing. So a couple of stocks that a guy that I work with, you know, he had suggested, and they have to do with supply chains here, getting things like that ready to make more. And they've actually done pretty well. And gold gave back a little bit and then bounced back and came, you know, it was down like 0.5% overall. It was not that big of a deal still. In fact, it hit a new all-time high yesterday at one point, 3,168. Silver, a little more givey-backy, you know, at this point. So a lot of drama out there in the financial world. You're going to continue to hear a lot about that. And some of the other reaction to it, Ford Motor Company announcing that it's going to extend employee pricing to everyone because of the tariffs that were announced by President Trump, including 25% tariffs. These are taxes on foreign-made cars that went into effect yesterday. So that is a big deal. That will be something which, so employee pricing. Reverend David was the one who first turned me on to that. I thought that was really interesting. I don't know if that's a sign of strength right now. Ford Motor Company has been having some troubles here for a while. I think this is just a little bit of a desperation to try to continue to hang on to market share. I'm not criticizing Ford. They're doing what they think they have to do. And their stock's been under pressure for a long, long time because of the electric vehicle losses and various other things. And then you put this on top of it. We'll see where this goes. Now, fortunately for Ford, they build 80% of its American-sold vehicles domestically. I was getting this out of the Epic Times this morning. So that's helpful. But it's that 20% that could be a big deal. Margins aren't nearly as high as they once were. Now then, you could expect that some of this was going to come back the other way. And Trump's trade war has China retaliating with 34% tariffs on American-sold goods in China. Of course, it's not going to hurt us really at all because we just don't sell all that much to China. If you do sell to China, well, I'm sorry for you. You know, that's going to suck because China's going to say, okay, yeah, China needs us considerably more. I think we trade three times more coming in from China, roughly speaking, than we send to them. So that's not going to have much of any effect at all. All right? All right. What are some other stories that we have going on this morning? Army slashes mandatory training requirements with regulation update. Looking at this in the Military Times, I always find the military news interesting. I guess they've been having a lot of classes that they think a lot of people in the military just kind of like just making all sorts of time and just wasting people's time. They're getting rid of a lot of that. 300 hours a year they were talking about in some of the training programs. Boy, that's a lot of time people were spending online trying to learn about stuff they may not actually need. The military is saying, hey, the only stuff we're carried about we care about is that you actually concentrate on training for war fighting capability. I think that is a code word for a lot of DEI crap being cut. I don't know for sure, but it could be. It could be. All right. Daily Signal reporting. I like this one. Trump administration's Health and Human Services agency canceling hundreds of millions of dollars in grants dedicated to the island of misfit humans, really, researching illegal sexual behavior in kids, pregnancy prevention for transgender boys, in other words, girls pretending to be boys, and so-called sleep inequality affecting black sexual minority men. Yeah, they cut $10,000 off promised funding to a conference at the University of Oklahoma called Be Curious, Not Judgmental, the Fourth National Symposium on Sexual Behavior of Youth. Oh, boy. I know people are going to die because of these cuts, I'm sure. That's the way Indivisible will be talking about it tomorrow when they protest around the country. Let's see. March 21st, Trump's NIH terminated a $2.9 million grant to University of Minnesota for researching on adolescent health at the intersections of sexual, gender, racial, ethnic, immigrant identities, and native language. People will die because of this cut, I'm sure, too. We'll hear about it tomorrow again. Something else Indivisible will be hissy-fitting about tomorrow. By the way, it's going to be all over the country. 12 noon, I guess, is when they're doing this. Hunter College lost its $211,000 grant to study development and feasibility of a psychosocial intervention for sexual and gender minority autistic adults. So Island of Misfit Humans, a human autistics. We had to worry about that. People will die, I'm sure, no doubt. March 18th, NIH cutting off Virginia Commonwealth University, $205,000 grant focused on using youth-engaged methods to develop and evaluate a measure for disordered eating behaviors in transgender and gender-diverse youth. Oh, this is just sad, sad, sad. People are just going to be dying left and right, you know, because of their government grift not coming in. Oh, it's so sad. So sad. Meanwhile, some other decent good news here. Number of migrant children arriving alone at the southern border has plummeted, reaching an all-time low in March. Border Patrol getting an encounter with 631 unaccompanied alien children at the southwest border last month. That's down 97% from a record 18,000, almost 19,000 kids that came in under Biden back in March of 2021. So some pretty good news there, too. All right. By the way, not all of the stock news yesterday was bad. There were some places that were doing okay. You know, one of the big winners? Kroger. Fred Meyer. Yeah, Fred Meyer stock. Doing okay. Not necessarily going up, but it's looked at almost as safety. And the grocery store chains not affected as much by tariffs. I thought that was pretty interesting. So you might be seeing people shifting into that kind of stuff, huh? All right. 770-5633. I think this is Tom. Good morning, Tom. How are you on Find Your Phone Friday?
Doing fine, Bill. Kind of a little bit of a subject shift here, but
that's okay.
Last night I watched a pretty remarkable video, which I, like you, I don't like to watch videos that much, but it was an interview between Tucker Carlson and a medical doctor, she was talking about her experiences with COVID, and she started out just a rather conventional, non-political medical doctor, but she started seeing right off very soon that the sickest people and the more people that were sick were all vaccinated. And she told, and she said many things about what she saw and experienced as a medical doctor, but one of the most interesting things of the whole thing that I thought was there were a lot of times where a person would be in the hospital and their spouse was trying to get them ivermectin. Mm-hmm. And there was a special lawyer group that went in and, you know, sued the hospital and really tried to do that. And it turned out that, they did like 180 cases, but they almost fell into two equal groups. One half of them got ivermectin, the other half they failed. And she said in that division, the people who died in the ivermectin group were only 3 out of, say, 90, and the other group, all of them died, every one of them.
Oh, I'm not surprised to hear this at all. Because I was, I and many of my friends around here in Southern Oregon, let me just put it this way, we kind of had the ivermectin railroad going on here during COVID time here. I didn't talk about it on the air a whole lot at that time, Tom, because, you know, you just couldn't. You'd be crushed by the system right now at that time, you know, during it. But you know how I talked about how I was taking it all the time? This is not about me, but I'm just saying, you know, once we saw what was going on, there were people I knew in Grants Pass, Medford, Ashland. We had kind of this ivermectin underground railroad going on.
Yes. Yeah, I was in contact with it, too.
Oh, okay. You knew. Yeah. And because we had to. You couldn't get legitimate prescriptions for it, so we were getting the ivermectin injectable and drinking it according to the FLCCC.net protocols. And I think Ann Barnhart, that financier, you know, had some good writing about it, too. People were contacting the Underground Railroad for this because they were dying. And they couldn't get it from the medical system. Medical system would not give it to them and their relatives. And there was work done to supply these people, and all of these people recovered. All of them. Every single one of the people that ended up approaching the ivermectin Underground Railroad, they recovered. And like I said, there are some sponsors of mine that ended up getting in contact with the Underground Railroad too. They were and they were talking about how I ended up getting a call from one of them one time. It said, "My husband is dying," and he said, "I'm just we don't know what to do because the hospital just sent him home with an oxygen bottle," and he said that husband just said he was just dying, was not going to make it, and then once the Underground Railroad supplied him with the veterinary, you know, ivermectin, which is what they were using at that time, it's the only source you had, the only source you could do, you know, at that point.
Yeah, the medical doctor talked about, you know, the protocols that she talked about when someone got COVID. It was about the 8th day that they really hit a crisis with the inflammation and so forth. And mm-hmm. so there's a definite protocol in the early stages, ivermectin, a few things. And then
and also vitamin D and aspirin. Yeah. There are all sorts of other things you had to do at that point. But, you know, like I say, back to that one person who had said the husband's dying. Once the railroad got it to him, it's like within 4 hours he was feeling better. And the next morning he wanted to go back to work. That's what a miracle that was at this time. And this was what was refused to most Americans, many who died over these times. It's a crime, really, in my opinion.
Well, it truly is a crime. And unless people become accountable and so forth, the crime will continue. It's like Catherine Fitz says, a crime that pays stays. And so that will be our fate if we don't do anything about this. But it was a crime.
Yeah, indeed it was. I'm glad to know. I'll have to take a look. I don't watch a lot of Tucker. I used to watch him more when it was easier for me to do it just on TV like that. But maybe I'll have to check that one out. Okay. I appreciate that.
It was really interesting because she was in the trenches. She evolved her consciousness about it just from what she was touching, seeing, feeling. You know, it was right there in her face. So it's very insightful.
Thank you very much for the tip on that one. 770-5633. By the way, there is someone who is continuing to try to call the show, and I've noticed that the system keeps hanging up on them, and they don't have caller ID on. The only way you can get through is to have caller ID. And I'm sorry about that, but it's about trolls, and trolls will usually always block their caller ID. And so that's why we had to turn on a system that that says that. So let your caller ID in so I know who you are or can see that you are legit and not a troll, and then you can make it through. Otherwise, you can't, okay? If you're on hold, I'll be right with you, though. Find your phone Friday. This is the Bill Meyer Show. Hi, this is Bill Meyer. Always appreciate
you. 0730.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Pacific Survey Supply, and I'm on KMED.
630. Jerry the Bull is here this Friday morning. How you doing, Jerry? What's on your mind?
Doing well, Bill.
Good.
Doing well.
Good.
Hey, as you were talking to Tom, I was thinking about Trump, and I was thinking about COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened during the last year of his first term? We had COVID.
Yeah.
And the economy shut down big time. All of a sudden. Anyway, well, Trump's back. Now, I know I'm not saying the economy is going to shut down, but I know a lot of people think it is.
Oh, like it's rhyming, right? A little like rhyming what? With 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously, it's not a medical thing.
Yeah.
But
at least we hope it won't turn into a medical thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I voted for Trump. I wish the best for Trump and his administration and to turn everything around. What I do know, Bill, even though I don't know what's going to happen economically, I do know that we cannot continue to go down the road that we've been going down with deficit spending and spending more than we make and blah, blah, blah.
And not producing anything.
It's going to blow up somewhere, sometime. And you know what? Even Ross Perot back in 92 said the same thing regarding entitlement and everything. And he said, you know, we don't know when, but we know that that's what's going to happen is it's just going to be the entitlements are going to be too big.
Everything works until it doesn't, right? How many times I've been talking about that? That's really the reality. Nobody can predict when finally the camel's back breaks or, you know, that sort of thing. It just doesn't, we don't know. And we've, you can tell that we can borrow and spend way longer than I think most people thought that it could have ever gone on. Would you agree on that? It's just crazy.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure people thought it would all be crashed by now, but it's still here. And, we're still surviving while we can.
I'm with you on this one. I'm guardedly optimistic about this. And when Porter Stansberry and a couple of other Trump insiders were talking about this essentially being Trump's great reset, and that you know, he wouldn't have been elected if he had told them everything that they were thinking about, I'm starting to think that they're right about this. And I would much more trust a great reset from President Trump, who I believe to the heart of my being loves this country, okay? I would trust. Remember, when you may recall the last few weeks I've been talking about, we've had dueling versions of what the Great Reset was supposed to be. You have the globalist version of the Great Reset, which is you will have your climate-friendly, equitable community in your little stack-and-pack home, and you will eat the bugs, because bugs are very nutritious, and you will take the bus. Now, Medford, of course, is still down on that path because of climate-friendly, equitable communities, but this and that and the other. But that's not the Trump way of looking at things. That,
right.
You know, his reset is that, okay, we're going to have to start making things again, and when we start making things again, it's probably going to hurt for a while as we transition, because a lot of the stuff which has been tariffed and it will be more expensive right now, Jerry, as we well know, it may not be built in the United States for a while, if ever. It may take a while, you know, to crank some of that stuff up. It doesn't go on a dime, as you well know. Those sort of things.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I will trust his version of a great reset over Klaus Schwab and Al Gore's version of a great reset any day of the week. Okay?
Yeah, I agree. And we'll see how it plays out. I think it's a multi-pronged approach.
Mm-hmm.
When I listen to his Treasury Secretary, it's not just about tariffs. It's about tax cuts. It's about, it seems like trying to slow down the economy where we're not spending as much.
Yeah.
Where we don't have all the deficit. So it's.
Yeah, I do wish that they had gotten the tax cut done first before they did this part about it. You know, but,
right.
You know, hey. I guess timing just didn't work out the way they were thinking about it. But we'll just have to be guardedly optimistic and watch it. And let's pray that it works, because it is a big disruption. You can agree with me on that. I think everybody agrees. This is a big deal.
Well, hey, you know, years ago, Bill, and I mean 50-plus years ago, I remember my dad telling us that what we need in this country is a good depression. And I thought, okay. And you know, this was probably around the time when we had just gotten off the gold standard and inflation was just beginning to start.
So your dad was talking about washing out the rot even then. Well, the rot has just continued to build and build and build, yeah, as we kick the can.
Well, and
right?
I think what, you know, anyway, we all need a wake up call. We all need to cut up with the credit card, so to speak. Huh. And you know, live within our means.
And what about the generations of kids whose greatest goal in life is to be a TikTok influencer?
Oh, God.
Something tells me that, you know, a tough time might sharpen the mind pretty quickly, because a lot of that TikTok economy is just a fake landfill economy sort of a situation for nonsense. Yeah. But anyway, hey, Jerry, I got to go. In fact, I'm going to talk with somebody about TikTok, because I guess we're up against this deadline for getting TikTok sold off. Something's going to happen. I'm going to talk with one of these people involved with that, okay? I'll catch you a little later, all right?
All right. Great. Okay.
Thank you, Jerry. Jerry the Bull, 637 at KMED. Yeah, we'll do that after news. TikTok. We'll shift gears for a little bit on the TikTok. Yeah, China.
Completed Electric Plus completes all those electrical...
...to by the Oregon Division of Financial Regulation, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Good morning. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Holly Marr joins me. She's the executive director of the American Parents Coalition. And Gus, if there's anybody that needs a coalition, it's parents these days. Holly, welcome back. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You know, a story that kind of got lost in the shuffle of all the drama this week in D.C. with tariffs and firings and doges, and you know how it's just been like a fire hose of news and drama. We know that. But there's a deadline tomorrow with negotiating with TikTok. I was just talking about TikTok with some folks and saying, hey, you know, all the kids today, they don't want to do anything productive. They want to be a TikTok influencer. What could go wrong with such an economic plan here? But you ended up writing a letter. You sent a letter to Vice President J.D. Vance ahead of this deadline here. Now, could you tell me what's been going on? You got billboards rolling around Washington, D.C. and everything. What are you trying to make happen here with this TikTok divestiture, divesting kind of call? What do you think?
For sure. Well, first of all, so our organization, American Parents Coalition, we have two big goals. First, we're determined to reclaim parental authority and also defend parental rights. So we're of the general mindset that nothing should stand between a parent and their kid, not the government, our schools, not the medical establishment, big tech.
And boy, you have a big high lift on this kind of stuff, because the attack on parents has been blistering these last few years, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, for sure. And so with TikTok specifically, you know, I think the biggest thing for people to consider when you zoom out is two things. First, that the adult and the child experience on TikTok is extremely different. So for your listeners who are like, well, I have TikTok and I don't see a problem with it, it's because the algorithm, which is controlled by a Chinese company with direct, you know, input from the CCP, which is, of course, our biggest adversary, they control the algorithm and what our kids see. And then when you combine that with the fact that kids are spending 2 hours a day, 120 minutes a day on TikTok. Now, that's not 120 minutes a day on social media. That's on TikTok. And the things that they see and are served by this algorithm are extremely dangerous. There was a study last year where they created new accounts as, you know, 13 to 16 year olds, like the youngest that you can be to create a TikTok account. And within 8 minutes and 2 minutes, those kid accounts were being served glorifying content about both self-harm and eating disorders. And so it creates this really dangerous ecosystem where kids are just constantly being feeded this really dangerous information and scrolling through that, and it's being, best case scenario, normalized. Worst case scenario, the kid gets down a rabbit hole and sucked into this really dangerous content. And so we sent a letter to Vice President Vance, as you mentioned, as the administration is negotiating in the final days of this deal, really urging them that if that algorithm is in any way, shape, or form still in Chinese control, that this, quote, deal would do a great disservice to the next generation of Americans.
In fact, you have a name for this. You're just calling it TikTok is poison, right? It's really all you're saying.
That's right.
Well, is... let me put it this way. Would having TikTok under American control, would an American poisoner be any better than a Chinese poisoner? What do you think?
That's a really great question. I would always want to assume the best of our fellow Americans. And I don't think that it being owned by Meta or Amazon or any of these, you know, other big Oracle, any of these other big companies who are in the room, I think they present their own challenges. Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, these other social media platforms are not, quote, good for kids. Social media under the age of 16, 17, 18 years old is a real problem for kids writ large. But I would much rather have conversations about parental controls and the types of content that kids have access to than knowing that we've handed the keys to a car to a known adversary, someone who wishes to do us harm and to brainwash the next generation. I'm sure you're familiar with last year. There was a, this was in like, you know, the wake of October 7th. There was a huge boom on TikTok of Osama bin Laden's letter to America. And all of these Gen Z and younger TikTok influencers were viewing the propaganda of, oh, wow, he's not so bad. Like, he's just anti-colonization, et cetera. and when there was a study.
In other words, it was like having a Columbia University gender studies professor in charge of the TikTok feed, right?
Exactly. And so when you've got the CCP with the ability to control that, and there was a study out of Rutgers somewhat recently where they were looking at trying to find some real data about whether or not the conversation was being suppressed. And they were comparing the usage of hashtags and like what was getting traction on Instagram and TikTok, which both have a similar number in their user base. And that the anti-American sentiment trending on TikTok was exponentially, it was like 59, not just like a couple times exponentially, 59 times higher on TikTok than it was on Instagram. So,
you know, is there a possibility, Ollie, that maybe you're barking up the wrong tree and that you should just be going out and trying to get parents to disconnect their kids from TikTok, no matter who owns it?
100%. And I'm glad you raised that point. So on our website, AmericanParentsCoalition.org, we actually have an entire page of resources dedicated to parents for them to be able to have these conversations in their family and with their kids. And we have a couple different things specifically on the social media side of things. We have conversation guides. So like, hey, sit down at the dinner table, have these conversations with your kids. Here's some helpful points as to why it's so dangerous. And then we also have, if you know, you don't get anywhere with that route, we have very like easy slide step-by-step instructions for each operating system on how you can actually block the app. And this would apply to other apps as well, but you could actually block TikTok on your phone, depending on what, you know, version you have, if you have a, you know, Android or an iPhone, whatever you have. So we will always be advocating for parents to have as much information and resources as possible. This one's a little bit unique, again, because of the angle with it being a known foreign adversary. But when it comes to social media writ large, I and our organization are very much of the position that parents should honestly turn it off, but have a very, very, very tight leash on social media and screen time access with kids.
Ali Marr is with me, executive director of the American Parents Coalition, and they're getting involved in trying to get a better outcome for this TikTok divestiture push. that the current administration is working on right now. Tomorrow being April 5th is the deadline. Now, is tomorrow the deadline for it to be divested or for the negotiations? Where actually are we in this process right now? I kind of lost track of it and all the other drama.
Yeah. So when President Trump took office, they basically granted an extension, for lack of a better way to describe it. He wanted the opportunity to, quote, save TikTok and see if he could get to a place that was basically in keeping with the spirit of what Congress passed last year, but allowed TikTok to continue to operate. And so that expires tomorrow, and we should have a better idea of what the administration is thinking at that point. And I guess, like, one of the last pitches I would make on that is, you know, we've seen this administration, you opened with this, they have taken action on all fronts. And it has been a great change from where we were just a few months ago even. And they have done so much in the pro-family, America First side of things to protect kids. You know, we've seen a strong push on taking control of the southern border. We've seen keeping men out of women's sports. But I don't think anything is a greater threat to the next generation than what is trying to control and influence their minds.
Speaking of which, I want to ask you, what level of gender confusion and pushing the island, what I term the island of misfit humans ideology, how much of that goes through TikTok? Is there a way to estimate that?
You know, I don't have hard numbers for you on that, but there was a study that I believe it was the Wall Street Journal did last year where they looked into, you know, some of these more cultural, quote, contagion issues.
Yeah, gender ideology being pushed through these kind of things. I'm wondering if that is big.
For sure. And they had some direct anecdotes and quotes from teens that they had interviewed where one said, yeah, TikTok identified that I was bisexual before I did. And so you hear...
Oh, come on.
But it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning with, you know, the suicide and the eating disorder content. If you hover on any of these videos for more than 3 seconds and you're like not just like passing through them, that algorithm targets you and it thinks you're interested in this and it will just feed you clip after clip after clip. And when you're talking about, you know, teenage girls who are, you know, in the throes of puberty and not fitting in and confused about their bodies changing, something we've all gone through and was not particularly enjoyable for anyone.
Yeah.
And you throw in that these unrealistic beauty standards that are constantly being, you know, thrown in these young girls' faces. And then they're spending 8 hours a day on the internet, just like engaged in this kind of content. No wonder they're messed up.
I wonder how badly we would have been messed up if we had this when we were kids, Allie. I really wonder.
It would be awful.
I don't know. It's one thing. Here is what would be the possibility of, and now this may be kind of talking against you a little bit here. If you look at TikTok in China, and the TikTok that is in China that is delivered to the kids is way different than the TikTok which is delivered here. You know, in America, the freaks and degenerates are delivered to the kids in TikTok. In China, you have positive cultural references. Here's Yu Yu Yang or whatever it is playing, you know, a Mozart piano concerto, things like this. That's the sort of stuff that gets delivered to kids in communist China. But here we get the dirt. What could be done about that? Because, you know, they're looking, you know, China is using TikTok over there to actually help their children. And here it's used to attack the kids.
That's right. And then again, if we had someone in control of an app with that kind of influence who actually had the next generation of Americans' best interests at heart, you know, there would be an opportunity to have that kind of influence for sure. And that's why not all digital content, not all social media is inherently bad, but the supervisory role of parents is just so important. You know, like I know my 6-year-old, she's in an alternative school and they do a lot of their math lessons, you know, in a gamified sense. And she loves it. But we're talking about math. You know, she's never seen TikTok, Instagram, Facebook in her life, and she's not going to for a very long time. But it is not inherently digital content in small doses that is bad. it is giving the keys to our kids' brains to an adversary and letting them control it.
Yeah.
And feeding them, you know, these social experiments.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that we don't go from dirtbag TikTok rather right now to just an American controlled dirtbag TikTok, if you know what I mean, right? So I just don't see where the positive side of that would be. Although I guess I'd still, at least we would be able to grab the dirtbag TikTok, running TikTok in America by the scruff of the neck more easily, I guess.
Well, and we have more control and more avenues by which we can influence American companies, and that is why our government and Congress exists, I think we are getting closer and closer to seeing our legislators wake up, especially as the millennial generation of elected officials start to actually come in and age into, these elected roles. We're seeing it in our kids and in Gen Z and want to affect that change. So, you can be lobbied as hard as you want by the tech industry, but at the end of the day, you're going to start having these parents coming into these leadership roles who are saying, yeah, that's great, but I'm seeing what it's doing to my kids' friends.
Yeah.
And then
look at all the tech bros, how many of them refuse to let their kids go on Instagram and TikTok and all the other places like that, the social media. They refuse to even let them have a phone in many cases.
That's a really good point. You hear that time and time again in interviews with some of the most vocal leaders in Silicon Valley saying that, their kids will never have.
Oh, but it's okay to screw with our kids, though, right? Yeah, our kids, that's fine. Hey, because after all, we got to sell you stuff. Yeesh.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where can people go to find out more about the, your organization, once again, the American Parents Coalition, and also maybe even help you on this holdout, getting in touch with J.D. Vance, maybe dropping a letter or an email or something. What can they do?
Yep. So AmericanParentsCoalition.org is our website. We have a lot of resources there. And one thing that we do that is a little bit unique from similar organizations, we have, I guess you could call it a quote newsletter that we send out. It's called The Lookout. But what makes it really different is you have plenty of, notifications and breaking news alerts. This is not that. It is not sent on any regular cadence. When there's a big story that's happening in the world of parental rights and influence, we digest that down into common sense English talking points. Here's what's mm-hmm. happening, but not just a warning of what's happening. We will, in that same note, include a bunch of resources for things you can do at your kitchen table today. And then also tell you what we're working on with the public advocacy side of things and how you can be helpful in that fight. So really taking this kind of three-pronged approach, keeping parents educated. Here's some things you can do at your kitchen table today. Mm-hmm. And then here's the broader approach that we as parents in the coalition can take from the public policy perspective.
I appreciate your work. I'm going to go to your site today and sign up for those alerts so I keep in on it, because I don't have any children. My children are all grown at this point. But I guess maybe I'll be looking for trying to keep their children, my grandkids, in better shape as time goes on. All right. And thank you so much for having shared what you're doing over at the American Parents Coalition. Ollie Marr is the executive director there. Thanks so much, Ollie. Great talk. Be well.
Thanks. Have a good one.
All right. It's 6:56. This is KMED and 99.3 KPXG.
AI can't get your cell phone up.
Putty and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Call Bill now, 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
A couple minutes before 7, this is KMED, KMED HD1. Eagle Point, Medford, KPXG, Grants Pass. We'll do some emails of the day. I have a couple, maybe two or three emails of the day segments because just too much good stuff coming in here. Emails of the day is sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson at Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. It's on Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant, okay, which is right down from McDonald's. So you have, two restaurants in the row, and then they'll work on your teeth, all right? One of the great things about Dr. Steve is that he will sell specialized treatment regimens to you, like medicated mouthwashes and toothpastes and water pick. Bought a water pick from him a while ago. He'll sell it to you at cost as a little kiosk. You don't even have to be his patient, but I think you ought to be his patient. Pretty good stuff over there, Central Point Family Dentistry. Butch writes me, Bill, I chuckled when I heard Eric Peterson and you talking about and the opinion of oversized wheels and tires. Yeah, Butch, that's what we call rims, okay? When I see a 1960s muscle car, anything with anything bigger than 16-inch wheels, I refer to them as clown wheels. What's really moronic is seeing a huge SUV jacked up with huge wheels and tires with a 3-inch sidewall. Just tiny sidewall, right? I love the freedom here of no vehicle inspections, but I wonder how long it's going to last. Windows tinted almost black, trucks raised beyond practicality with tires just dying to float on water, diesels belching black smoke as the owner pretends it's a 600 cubic inch blown V8 for what? Now, I am not without sin. My Hemi Magnum runs straight through its converters, no mufflers, but it's still quieter than most Harleys I see. I hear driven by accountants and salesmen that are dressed like they're going to a Hell's Angels meeting. Thanks for a fun and informative show, Butch. Butch, always happy to help you out on that thing. Chris writes me, Bill, this popped up on my feed this morning from the city of Medford. City Council considers proposals for Main Street restriping. Yeah, three alternatives. There are three alternatives being discussed, Chris, and you're absolutely right. And one of them is relatively modest. Another one was more expensive, but they would have to repay the $750,000 grant that they took to repave and restripe Main Street in the first place. And then, Chris, there's another one that they're talking about, which hasn't been getting a lot of play. It would be a $10 million transformation of Main Street in which they would turn it into like a plaza with tons of trees in the middle of it. In other words, going even more down the climate-friendly, equitable community thing. So I hope that you stay very close and get very involved in the various surveys that no doubt the gangrene and the spandex mafia crowd will try to do. It's like there's just a part of me that would hope that the Medford City Council would just stop it, please stop doing it. They keep wondering, and I'm not blaming the current council because what they're suffering under is stupidity from prior councils that say, hey, all we have to do is put a road diet on there and put bicycle highways in there for the bums and bollards everywhere and get everybody all confused, and then we'll get this $300,000 or $750,000 grant from the state of Oregon, and then we'll be able to do this. And, you know, I'm not blaming them for this. They didn't vote. This was past stupidity. Hopefully, they're not doing any current stupidity, but still, past stupidity is what we are we're talking about that we're dealing with right now. And they wonder why. I don't know if it's they, if it's the council, but the planners say, well, we're trying to get more people attracted to downtown Medford, and what are we going to do about this? We have to do something. And everything that is done makes you want to go downtown less often. Because everything about attracting more people to downtown Medford, the way it's funneled through the current planning system, and maybe this is the climate-friendly, equitable community garbage, and there's more of that coming too. I'll talk about this over the next few days. Hey, the problem with this is that everything that is connected with climate-friendly, equitable community means that they don't want you driving and you don't want you taking a car. Well, this is an older community. You're not going to be getting an 85-year-old living in East Medford to come downtown to a Medford festival of some sort if you're insisting that they ride a bicycle or ride RVTD to do it. But yet, that's kind of how they're doing it. We're going to get rid of parking. We're going to have the speeding cameras coming in and out of there. We're going to pop you. Let's do a few million dollars in fines for it. And then they wonder why people try to bypass downtown. You're not really able to get the bums out of the way here, so nobody wants to come downtown and go to a nice restaurant if you're having to deal with the bums and the panhandling and various other things and just with the disorder. Now, it's not total disorder and dirtbaggery, but there's a lot of it still going on. And I think there's this the planners are kind of in the, under this mindset that, well, all we have to do is turn it into a plaza, $10 million, and oh, it's be another tourist attraction, and people will be flying into the Rogue Valley International Airport, and then we're going to have another piece of wonderful infrastructure, and we're going to fill motels with it. There's a little bit of that going on. A little bit of that going on. They're the kind of people that write me and say, Bill, why are you still bagging on Rogue X? I say, because it's not what we needed. It's what the good old boy network wanted. The good old boy network wanted Rogue X. They wanted something big in the northwest side of town when really what most parents need is a neighborhood swim pool. You know? But that doesn't fulfill the, oh, we need people flying in for cornhole tournaments, you know, kind of approach. And it's in one section of town. One section of town that you go for the swimming. At the same time, everything else from your city council and your government is saying, you're not supposed to be driving to these sort of places. Well, that would seem to mean that you should be decentralizing and distributing swimming opportunities around the city rather than just having one place. And I know I've lost it and it's already there. Why are you criticizing this bill? Because it's not what we needed. It's what the good old boy network wanted. Huh. All right. I'm feeling better now. And yes, I know if you probably like going to Rogue X. That's fine. Good. It's okay. But we're all paying for it. The vast majority of people will likely never go to Rogue X, but yet we're paying for it. I would have preferred that pools be looked at as a community need and expense rather than looking at how we're going to have cornhole tournaments and that will make us rich here in Southern Oregon. Just me, all right? Maybe I'm the idiot here in this case, but this is the Bill Myers Show.
American Industrial Door invites you to see the...